Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you could join us on the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening. And what a Sunday evening it is. Not just because Cork have won, but because hurling is back. The GAA is back. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Sundays feel like Sundays again. And what a win for Cork today. Good win for them over Waterford down in Porkeycueve. We'll have reaction coming up very, very shortly. Colm O'Sullivan was down there for us. He heard from Dermot O'Sullivan a short while ago. We'll hear from him in a bit. And we'll also hear from the rest of the Cork panel as well. And we'll see what else Colm can talk to us about. And we'll talk to Colm in a bit as well. Also on the show tonight, we are talking to the new head coach of the Irish Warriors, Owen O'Sullivan. And I challenged David Myler to a game of FIFA earlier on in the week. You can hear how that went down a little bit later on. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Rory here with you until 7 p.m. Really glad you could join us for the show tonight. And if you want to get in touch with us, 0868104106 is the place to send your messages to us, either on text or on WhatsApp. Plenty to get through on the show this evening. So we'll get to them as much as we can over the next hour or so. But yeah, a fantastic day today for Cork with that victory over Waterford. Good performance from the Rebels, it has to be said. Today we'll get all the latest from the team in just a little bit. And as I mentioned, Colm heard from Dermot O'Sullivan, the Cork coach. We'll hear from him in just a little bit as well. But five goals for Cork today in that win. Good stuff from them as they start their National League campaign. Always hard going into a game like that without a lot of, I suppose, preparation. They've only been back the last 3 weeks. Couldn't have any challenge games or anything like that. So it was a good win for the Rebels and a winning start. And that was the important thing. 5-22 to 127 was how it finished. Next up, it's Tipperary next Saturday in Thurles. So a good win today for the Rebels. Elsewhere today, Antrim beat Clare and probably the biggest result of the day, 121 to 22 points in their Division 1 National Hurling League game at Corrigan Park today. Kieran Clark with a goal for the hosts. They provided a shock in their first game since being promoted. Elsewhere, among the results, at Wexford hammering Laois 417 to 10 points this afternoon at Wexford Park. And as I mentioned, Cork with that impressive 522 to 127 win over Waterford this afternoon down in Porkeycueve. The pitch looking absolutely immaculate today, considering the rain that was around Cork today. It looked absolutely fantastic. Elsewhere in Division 2A, finished Kerry 418 down 19 points. Offaly 325, Meath 39 and Carrow 319, Wicklow 17 points. And in 2B, Donegal 113, Roscommon 111 and Mayo 21 points. Derry 116. In football, Manchester United coming from behind to defeat Aston Villa this afternoon. Tom Gale, watch this one.
One Manchester United 3. The visitors coming from behind and winning for a ninth time on the road this season. It means Manchester City's title coronation waits as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's men cut their gap to 10 points. Second half goals from Bruno Fernandes, Mason Greenwood and Edison Cavani. Two yellows for Villa striker Ollie Watkins, saw him sent off late on at full time. Aston Villa 1, Manchester United 3.
That's 16 goals now for Mason Greenwood, so he has now overtaken the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and Ryan Giggs as the teenager score the most goals for Manchester United since the Premier League began. So impressive stuff from him. And it means Manchester City, of course, have to wait to be confirmed Premier League champions. And United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, happy enough with the display?
Always going to be difficult after you've been in Europe, in Rome, didn't come back until 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning Friday. Great reaction at half time again, even though I felt first half we were the better team, created the more chances, but we couldn't get the goal.
Elsewhere, Wolves beating Brighton today. Adam Drury.
A 90th minute winner for Morgan Gibbs-White earned Wolves a 2-1 win over Brighton. The Seagulls took the lead 13 minutes in when Lewis Dunk rose to score from a corner. Then in the second half, Dunk went from hero to villain when he was sent off for a last man foul on Fabio Silva. The extra man told for Wolves on 76 when Adama Traore equalised. Then in the 90th minute, Gibbs-White side-footed a strike into the top corner of the net to secure all 3 points for the hosts. Full-time at Molineux, finished Wolves 2, Brighton 1.
And their reaction of Brighton boss Graham Potter.
I think we started off the second half slowly and sloppily, which I think is probably a result of then the red card happens and then when it happens so early, it is difficult to keep them out. And they made substitutions, of course, freshen up with some good attacking players. And it's a tough afternoon.
One more game tonight as Arsenal host West Brom at 7 o'clock. Joe Rawson.
This game has a feel of who's going to be put out of their misery. Arsenal know their faint hopes of salvaging a Europa League spot in the Premier League will be all but over without a win, while West Brom will be officially relegated if they don't take all 3 points. Mikel Arteta will be hoping for a response from his side after their European exit in midweek, with many fans now doubting whether he's the right man to take the club forward, while Sam Allardyce will have his side fired up for one last go. At the Emirates Stadium, it's Arsenal versus West Bromwich Albion.
76 minutes on the clock in the other game in the Premier League today at the London Stadium, where Everton are a goal up away to West Ham. Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a fine goal after 24 minutes, putting Everton ahead against the Irons there, but still 14 minutes left for West Ham to try and get something out of the game, or for Everton to hold out. Elsewhere, St Johnstone through to the Scottish Cup final after a 2-1 win over St Mirren. It's their second domestic cup showpiece of the season after they lifted the League Cup, so St Johnstone will now play Hibs in the final later on this month. That'll be at Hampden. Chelsea have retained the Women's Super League title after they beat Reading by 5-0. Elsewhere, Man City were 1-0 winners at West Ham, and a point for Arsenal after a goalless draw with Aston Villa secured the final Champions League place. At the other end, Bristol City relegated, they lost 3-1 to Brighton. Manchester United finished 4th, they had a 2-0 win over Everton. Tottenham were 1-0 victors at Birmingham. Elsewhere today in golf, and two-time winner Rory McIlroy will bid for another Wells Fargo Championship on the PGA Tour this evening, having won the tournament in 2010 and 2015. The Down Natives in a tie for second place on 7 under par. He'll tee off at 20-7 Irish time, along with Keith Mitchell, who has a two-stroke advantage on 9 under. Seamus Power finishing 4 over after his final round. Shane Lowry 2 shots further back on 6 over par. Meanwhile, at the Walker Cup, the USA leading Great Britain and Ireland by 8.5 to 7.5 heading into the singles. So Team GB and I will need 6 wins in the 10s singles matches. Cork's John Murphy is in that GB and I team, so we'll keep you posted on how he is doing. So we'll get you posted on that. We spoke to John a couple of weeks ago on the Big Red Bench. Very impressive stuff from him, looking at turning pro a little bit later on in the season, the year as well. So certainly one to look out for, and playing very, very well in that GB and I team over the weekend. Now, in Formula 1, Lewis Hamilton has extended his lead in the Drivers' Championship by winning the Spanish Grand Prix. The Mercedes driver is now 14 points clear of Red Bull's Max Verstappen, who finished second. Valtteri Bottas completed the podium in a distant third. We are going to start, though, with hurling, and of course that fantastic win for Cork today over Waterford. An impressive performance from the Rebels right out of the gate, and plenty of goals as well. 5-22 to 1-27. The Rock, Diarmuid O'Sullivan, was up for press conference duties. Our man Colm O'Sullivan was down there. We'll hear from Colm in a bit. First, though, we are going to hear from The Rock himself, Diarmuid O'Sullivan.
Look, it's important. We had a long winter. You know, players, a lot of individual work done. It was, I suppose, it was about coming together as a collective, blow the cobwebs off, and reflecting today's result, and see where we'd be at the end of the 70 minutes, and move to the next week.
What are the positives you took out of the win today?
Look, I suppose there's a few. You know, we used the ball well, we retained the ball well, we worked incredibly hard. Without the ball, we worked incredibly hard, and I think it's been a focus for us. Can we improve it? 100% we can improve on that, but look, it's a start, we won't get carried away.
Yeah, is that something you've been kind of emphasising to players over the past couple of weeks, that work rate, Dermot?
I think every team is emphasising on it, lads. It's not just Cork. Success in the All-Irelands over the last number of years has been deemed on work rate and hard work, getting around the field and supporting each other. And you know, if we're to be successful, we need to take that mantra on board as well.
5 goals first day out there was very pleasing, obviously, and real quality scores.
Yeah, John, look, any day you score 5 goals, you always have a chance of winning a game, you know. Goal creation has been, is something we've been working on also. But, you know, again, it's first day out, the cobwebs are out. Let's move to next Saturday, is our next challenge.
Great to see Alan Connolly coming on, looking very sharp with the 2 chances he got.
Yeah, look, you know, it's not about any one individual. We've a collective, we've 36 guys who dedicated themselves really, really well since, you know, they were handing out the programmes at start of December, and worked really diligently, come back in good shape. So when they've done that, it allows us to get straight down to the important part, which is the hurling side and the tactical side of it.
And, you know, 3 goals from players who came off the bench, like, that's probably an area maybe that Cork haven't been as strong as other counties in recent years. Like, is it something that you're targeting, like, to have more of an impact from players coming on?
again, look, it's similar to everyone else. You need starters and you need finishers. We refreshed our panel. We felt bringing in younger guys who have, you know, who can give us a lot going forward, not just today or tomorrow, but over the next couple of years. It's important that we freshen things up, and a couple of lads there came in and done really well.
And in the first half especially, maybe it got a bit ragged in the second half, but the defending was very solid. Like, there was, you know, even with the change in the rules, there was never any sense that lads were under pressure that way. Like, they stood up to the challenge of forced turnovers rather than any, relying on any last-ditch defending.
There was a couple of efforts at last ditch there in the first half, right? But look, it's pleasing that we're starting to learn. We're starting to learn from our mistakes over the last couple of years and putting into practice now and moving ahead.
Was there any extra motivation today, Dermot, to beat Waterford after there was no time in the Munster semi-final last October?
Absolutely not. That's gone. There are days we can never get back. It's like the 70 minutes is gone. We can't get this day back again. So all our focus, no least Tipperary next Saturday, and how we can take on that challenge.
What are your thoughts on the way the new rules worked out today, Dermot?
Look, everyone's going to have their own interpretations, lads. You know, looking at TV last night, it was very stop-start. At times today was stop-start. I think we have to be fair and give the referees a chance to get up to speed with them. It's a learning curve for them as much as us, so I don't think we can be too critical the first weekend out.
Dermot, can I just ask you about, I suppose, this is a slightly different league campaign because of the fact we don't have a point at the end of it. So how much emphasis do you put on games like these, and how much of it, gives you a new opportunity now to blood young players that you might necessarily have in a very competitive league that you would have had before?
I think every league game is hugely important for us. As I said, we've changed our squad. We're not lucky enough to be in a position where we've been challenging for titles the last number of years. So every game is important to us, and you know, we need to get the maximum out of these games. Whatever 15 takes to play, what takes to field, whatever 7 guys come on, I think they need to maximise their opportunities through that time.
And I suppose just heading into the game, are you kind of emphasising the fact that last year, obviously your opening game of the year, you lost to Waterford and getting on that kind of front foot straight away? Are you glad now to be kind of on the front foot, getting a bit of momentum?
It's one win. It's one in the league. We're not going to get carried away. We know we've an awful lot of work to do, and next Saturday night's challenge is the next one, so we'll keep going back to it. That's our next focus, what we'll have to bring to the table to beat Tipperary next Saturday night.
Do you have a couple of players unavailable for today, like the Collins Fillan and on Cadigan, Declan Dalton? Any update on their fitness?
Yeah, look, they're not too far away, but you know, there's no guarantees or no automatics in this squad, and I think that's been set out. Every guy knows where he stands. If you're not fit, you have to pass the fit to play protocol over the next coming week, and if you're doing well enough for training, you'll get a game. It's as simple as that. We picked today's team on form and guys playing at training, so we're going to keep that mantra.
Having lost the water for twice last year, this team that you went out and, you know, did what you did and laid down a marker with them.
Again, look, we can get carried away on last year. Look, last year's gone, we can't get it back. We can get carried away, and today it's one victory. We set ourselves out that we would try and definitely win our home games. Obviously Waterford was first up, put our best foot forward, give guys an opportunity to consolidate themselves, keep themselves in the team, and see where it got us.
You know, the first goal you got was really, really well worked. That's the type of game that Cork are trying to play. It appeared to be that, just that support play, that very solid passing, good approach work. It was a real example of maybe where you want to go.
Yeah, look, it was a very good goal, but you know, it's only one aspect of the game. One aspect of the game we need to work on. So it is pleasing to score 5 goals in a row.
Yeah, it's Dermot O'Sullivan there speaking to the Assembly Media after that win over Waterford today, 5-22-1-27. Plenty of goals for the Rebels. And a good performance as well over the day, Sinéad, as you heard, after being beaten by Waterford last year. Good to get one back on them this year. Colm O'Sullivan was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh for us. He's still in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, I might say, and he joins us on the line now. And Colm, a good performance by Cork today.
A very good performance by Cork today, Roar. Very, very impressive. I mean, you could have had, I suppose it would apply to both teams, but you could have said guys might have come into the game rusty. It's been such a long layoff and such a long off season. Obviously, things starting late now. We're well into May and the league campaign is just getting underway today. But no, the players didn't look rusty on either team today. They both looked very up for it. They all looked very, very fit. In particular, the Cork players looked at the peak of their prowess. They looked really, really good, and really strong performance from Cork, a high scoring performance from Cork. Cork, Patrick Horgan running the show, as we would not be surprised by in the slightest roar. 13 of Cork's points today were scored by Patrick Horgan, so he was absolutely fantastic. 5 goals from 4 different goal scorers as well. All round, really, really impressive.
Yeah, looked really good as well. Considering Cullen, they've only had 3 weeks together to play. They haven't been able to play any inter-county challenge matches or anything like that. It's a hugely impressive start, but it is just that. It is just a start.
It is, and you heard Dermot O'Sullivan just a few minutes ago saying, lads, relax, it's just one game, it is just the start, there's a long season to come, the games are going to come thick and fast, they're playing Tipperary again next week, so we'll have to kind of judge it over a couple of games, Roar, but it is a very, very impressive start for Cork today, and as you said, they only had about 3 weeks or so together as a squad beforehand, so not a lot of time to kind of to get a feel for things, to get up to their fitness. I'm sure they were all doing their own things and training away during the off-season and during the COVID lockdown as well, but as I said, they look very fit today, they look very sharp today, right throughout the squad, really. You could say that everybody was looking very, very fit, very, very sharp. And I think that was reflected by the spread of goal scorers and things today as well. You had Robert O'Flynn's goal in the first half, put Cork up with a 4-point lead. They went in at half-time with a 4-point lead. Then Cork came really out fighting. They came out battling and extended their lead quite a bit in the second half. You had goals then again from Jack O'Connor in the second half. Then later on, Shane Kingston came on as a sub. He got another goal for Cork. And then there were two quick fire in quick succession goals from Alan Connolly late in the game. And a sending off kind of squeezed in between those two goals as well. So very, very impressive from Cork all round. As I said, 22 points for Cork, 13 of which were scored by Patrick Horgan. So I don't think you could fault anything really with the Cork performance today. We'll hear from Liam Cahill in a few minutes, the Waterford manager. He wasn't too happy with his performance, his side's performance, and he thought they might have done a bit better than they did. But I think Cork just were on a mission today, they, especially on home turf in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, they wanted to get off to a winning start.
And good to see him looking for goals as well. Dennis Hurley, our colleague in the Echo, tweeting that in the leagues of 2017, 2018 and 2019, Cork didn't score 5 goals in 5 games. So obviously a change in focus and a change in attitude in that Cork attack as they look for that goals, and that's obviously something that Kieran Kingston would have been looking for from his team today.
You'd imagine the way it went today, Roar, that it's something they've spoken about, that it's something they've looked at over the past couple of seasons, because that's an amazing statistic that they've scored more goals today than they have in the entire league campaigns over the last couple of years. And you'd imagine it's something they've said, lads, we need to go out there, we need to score a lot of goals, we'll get the points, but we need to get the goals to rack up the scores. And my God, getting 5 today now, 3 of them did come quite late on, 2 in particular from Alan Connolly came very late on. It was a real flurry of goals that just put Waterford totally out of sight towards the end of the game, even though Cork were already in the lead. But I mean, the lead was kind of, Waterford might have thought they could get back into it, but those goals just totally killed it off. And you'd like to think that is something Kieran Kingston and his backroom team have instilled into the players, that they need to get those goals and they need to kill off games. And you'd like to think it's a sign of things to come for Cork, because as I said, there's a league campaign now to come over the next few weeks. We've got the championship campaign to come, I think starting around the end of June, and you'd like if Cork could do very, very well this season. And to do that, they're going to have to be banging in goals, they're going to have to be racking up points, and they got off to a good start and did it today against Waterford.
Yeah, and they're heading up to Thurles now next Saturday night. I don't think there's a Cork player in the county who doesn't like playing in Thurles, so it'll be a good clash against Tipperary, but they're certainly going to go up there high in confidence.
They certainly are going to go up there high in confidence. I don't think they'll fear anything from Tipperary. Obviously, it's going to be a very, very tough game against Tip. I mean, Tip are a great side. Thurles is a very, very tough place to go. But as you say, Roar, it's a place that traditionally Cork players, I think all hurlers enjoy playing in over the years in Semple Stadium. The Cork players will relish going up there now to face Tipperary next weekend. They'll do so on the back of this comprehensive victory today. A 7-point margin could probably have been more, to be honest, for Cork today. They were that strong and they were that dominant over Waterford throughout the game. You never got a feel, even when Waterford started getting a few points back, and they got a goal late on when the game was out of sight. You never felt Waterford were going to get back into it, even from early on. I mean, Patrick Horgan put Cork up a point after 15 seconds of the game, and then for the first 15 minutes or so, it was kind of tit for tat. Cork would get a point, Waterford would get a point. From then on, from Cork getting the first goal through Robbie O'Flynn, from then on, really, Cork looked out of sight. I mean, it never looked like Waterford were going to get back into the game. So a very strong performance from Cork all around today, and they'll have a bit of confidence, I think, going up to Tips at the Semple Stadium next week.
All right, I'm sure. So actually, what was it like being in an empty Páirc Uí Chaoimh watching a hurling game today?
I was going to say it to you, Roar. It was fantastic being in an empty Páirc Uí Chaoimh today. You know, I think we kind of feel privileged to be able to go to these games in places like Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Now the GA season is starting. We've been doing it the last few weeks, going to Turner's Cross to see Cork City in action. And I mean, we have to kind of emphasise the fact that we want the fans there. We love going there ourselves. But even for us going there, it's not the same. And I'm sure the players on the pitch today felt that as well. There was something kind of eerie about the stadium today. There was probably maybe 100 media or maybe 50 people there, kind of between media and stewards, maybe 100 people. And that was kind of it then, you know. Then you had the squads and the players and the management. But that was it in this 50,000-seater stadium. It feels wrong, Roar, but obviously we know the circumstances. But we are hearing positive sounds during the week from Micheál Martin and things about getting fans back into stadiums. They're going to trial games in July, and you see the front of some of the papers then today saying we could have quite big crowds at the All-Ireland finals later on in the season. So fingers crossed. It was nice to be there today, but I'd have much rather if there was 50,000 fans there with me as well.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be one of the last games we see in Páirc Uí Chaoi without any supporters. All right, Con, thanks for that.
Thanks, Roar.
It's Colman Sullivan live in Páirc Uí Chaoi there for us for that game. He mentioned here from Liam Cahill in his post-match press conference, and here is the Waterford manager.
A fair reflection of what happened out in the field today.
Not really, Tomás. It should have been a lot more comprehensive, in my opinion. I thought we were well beaten on the day. Only for Cork, we really took the foot off the gas there with 10-15 minutes to go. It looked like we were in big trouble.
But what worried you about the performance today, Liam?
I think what really worried us was our naivety and, I suppose, our inability to counteract Cork's movement. You know, Cork, in fairness to them today, were really good. They've really, you know, came out with real intent and asked a lot of questions of us, creating a lot of movement up front, a lot of overlaps, you know, a puck out strategy, I suppose, that took a lot of communication to break down and make sure that they weren't getting the gains from, but we kind of failed to do that consistently throughout the game, and it hurt us. But, you know, I suppose the positives on the other side is we scored, 27 scores, and we didn't give up, which is the main thing, and we learned a lot about a number of players in different positions today as well as to what might work and that definitely won't work going forward. So,
what did you say to the players below in the dressing room, Liam?
I just said that, you know, the big thing from today is we have to learn, you know, the answers can't be from me now or the management team after today. It has to come from the players. The players have to really look at how they have to. No, it's by no means alarm bells, Tomás, don't get me wrong, it's not. It's just a case of you know, you play the match that's put in front of you, and, you know, we fell short today in a lot of the areas, and we need to just address it and correct it. And I think it's good now that it happens now in early May than it does towards the end of June heading into the Championship.
Liam, disappointed those last three goals, you say, that they went in particular. It just got very ragged at the end there.
Yeah, it very much had challenge match, I suppose, feel to it towards the end. And that's always disappointing because it is the National Hurling League, and it should be all guns blazing throughout the match. But I think, you know, it definitely fizzled out as it went along. And as I said, our lapse of concentration, again, towards the end, hurt is big, and just when we looked like to be trying to get something out of the match, having it back to 4 points, we just handed the initiative back to Cork again. And you know, unfortunately, this team has a tendency to do that, and it's something that we're still working on very hard to try and counteract and try and eradicate. You know, so lots of work to do.
Get a look at Callum Lyons' red card.
I didn't see it yet, but I would say that, you know, there was, from where I was standing, there was a flick all right from behind, and there was a bit of contact, but the rules is probably, I don't know, the rules of state, it's a red card, but I would hope that would be just the minimum, whatever red card warrants, I hoped is the minimum, which would be a one-match ban. I couldn't see it being any more than just rough play, in my opinion.
Yeah, it looked a bit of a harsh red card, to be perfectly honest about it there, but that's Waterford boss Liam Cahill speaking after Cork's defeat to, Cork's win over Waterford, I should say, this afternoon down in Páirc Uí Chaoi. As I mentioned, Cork going to Thurles to face Tipperary next Saturday evening, which should be a cracking game. Really looking forward to that one next Saturday night. All right, in the Premier League, and West Ham and Everton drawing to a close. Everton's still leading by a goal to nil. They're into time added on there. It was Dominic Calvert-Lewin with the game's only goal after 24 minutes, so we'll get you an update on that one as soon as we get it in a full-time report to come from the London Stadium in a bit. Now, Cork's David Minor was in hand to launch the ELOI finals, which take place tomorrow. Cork City represented by Mr. Welly. Cork City facing Drogheda United in the quarterfinals of the FIFA tournament. The winning player will get €2,000 for their club as well. So not small money on offer tomorrow night. Twitch.tv/FA Ireland from 4:30 tomorrow if you want to watch those games. So it should be a good one. David Moyler was on a Zoom call to promote the event earlier on in the week. I asked him about his Cork accent and I challenged him to a game of FIFA in the bit. But first he was asked on this call about the sad passing of Ireland legend Alan McLaughlin.
No, definitely. It's one of those moments, I think, that stands out in Irish history, certainly in regards to football. I look back on my own experiences. You look at, you know, Robbie Keane in 2002. You look at Robbie Brady against Italy. And obviously, Alan McLaughlin's goal, Windsor Park in November 93, is obviously massive. And it's one of those iconic moments that, you know, stands out. And it gets replayed all the time. Of course, it's an awful tragedy at such a young age, at 54. You know, obviously had a terrible battle with cancer. I just, you know, send my thoughts and prayers out to his family, obviously going through this tough time.
Was he anybody that you ever came across over the past number of years? Did your paths cross at any stage?
No, I never unfortunately met him. But it's always one of the hardest things is, you know, when you see all, you know, people that know him, players who've played with them, they all come out and they all speak of, you know, forget about being the footballer, but the man he is and, you know, how fond he was thought of, how good of a person he was, the impact he's had, of course, in Irish football and, you know, the career he had in England. And you see all these people speaking so highly of him. It's a shame I never met him because, you know, everyone speaks so highly of him.
And just on, I suppose, the dust has settled somewhat on Stephen's two games sort of back in March. How do you reflect on the bad start to the campaign now that Ireland have made?
It's always interesting. Obviously, I remember after Luxembourg, you know, on the Sunday, everybody's a bit hot and bothered and they're a bit agitated and you're thinking, what's going on? Where's this going? And we have this philosophy of what we're meant to be doing. But obviously, as time kind of goes by, you start to look at the bigger picture and look through everything. The big thing for me is, with the appointment of Stephen, is I think there's a bigger picture in place. I think Stephen has this philosophy that he started with the 21s, of course, then he went into the senior management. I definitely think there's a pathway that he wants to bring through. It's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. If you look at the squad of players we have, first and foremost, a lot of them aren't playing regular football, which is always going to be difficult. Stephen's had to overcome a lot of adversity with certain players with COVID, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. So it has been a really, you know, challenging time. The biggest thing I took from when I look at the squad is you have a lot of players. If you look at, you know, there was a wonderful piece on it. I can't remember who did it now. It was a few months ago, but it spoke about the years of the players being born. It's kind of like how the underage kind of comes through. There's actually a massive gap of, you know, players between the ages of, like, you know, born the year 94, 95, 96, 97. So we have kind of this older experience group with, like, John Egan, say, Jeff Hendrick, Robbie Brady. And of course, then you have the older lads like McLean, Coleman, Long. But then the next kind of step off is a massive drop down to, you know, your Jason Knight, your Malumbies, you know, Aaron Connolly's, these young players who are coming through who are still kind of almost learning the ropes. So it's going to be difficult. A lot of these lads now are, you know, first names on the team sheet for Ireland. So obviously Stephen has to deal with all that. These players will only get better with time. They'll get more experience. So that's why I look towards the bigger picture when I say I see Stephen's plan and what he's trying to do. And I'm fully supportive and I'm fully behind him.
Hi, Colin. Hi, David. How are things, boy?
You all right, boy?
I'm good, boy. The Cork accent comes up when you're talking to the Cork radio station.
I know. Yeah, you have to soften it down there when you're... Yeah. You get used to it living over here for that long.
Greer, what I want to ask is, have you been keeping an eye on Cork City's progress and your old teammate Colin Healy this season?
I have kept a far eye. Yeah, obviously Colin's had a difficult start, but I've no doubt, look, Colin's a great footballing man. He's been around Cork City, the club, for God knows what, going back to, I'd say, 05, 06. He's been in and around involved in the club as far as I can remember. So Colin knows what's required. You know, he's a good footballing man, like I said, so I've no doubt he'll be able to turn around and pick results up.
He would have been just at the club when you were there, I'd say, was he?
No, Colin was, yeah. I'll never forget it. Colin was someone I greatly admired. Obviously, Colin was over, you know, Sunderland, Celtic. Of course, you had, you know, the late Liam Miller. Of course, Roy Keane, three midfielders. Three I watched closely. And then, of course, I got to know the three of them as I progressed on my footballing path. And I remember when I first broke into the, you know, the Cork City team, Colin was very harsh on me. But definitely showed me the ropes and what was required to be a professional footballer to get to the level that was required to play in the Premier League, etc. I learned a great deal from Colin. I've no doubting look. Obviously, I know he's kind of new to his management career, and it's going to be, you know, these are tough times, but I've no doubting that Colin, you know, will turn it around and you know, they'll come good.
Dave, thanks, buddy. Must play at FIFA someday.
Ah, cheers, boy.
You can apply, I'm sure, Rory, to represent Cork City next season. And we'll arrange a match.
Yeah, he's got a Cork Ramblers top on.
I know, but if the Cork City mug here as well, balance.
Oh, yeah. Cork's Red FM, huh? That's it, yeah, Cork. It's not Cork City's.
Perfect. And just the final one, you mentioned Colin Healy earlier. Obviously, he's starting his coaching career with Cork City. I know you've done a few of your badges, so is that something maybe you'd like to do one day, go back to Cork City and start your manager career there?
I can't say that while Colin is manager. He'll be on the phone to me. No, look, I'm definitely something I looked at. I'm nearly finished my A license. Obviously, the natural progression then would be to do the pro license. I'm involved with the Ireland under 17s. It's something I really enjoy. It's probably the closest thing I can get to playing. So I'm definitely enjoying that. And it is something, look, I do want to one day become manager. Whether that's with Cork City or wherever, I don't know. But eventually, someday, I would like to go down that route.
Yeah, the Big Red Bench on Cork Red FM. That's David Miter speaking at the launch of the ELOI finals taking place tomorrow. Twitch.tv/FA Ireland. Best luck to Mr. Welly representing Cork City in the quarterfinals tomorrow against Drogheda United. And yes, I was wearing a Cork Ramblers top during that press conference, which David Miter rightly pointed out, which was very, very nice of him indeed. All right, still to come on the show, we're going to talk AFL with the Corkman who's been appointed the new Irish head coach. That's up next.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
We're here with you on the bench until 7. Everton have held on to that 1-0 lead that they had, and they have beaten West Ham. Guy Swindles.
West Ham 0, Everton 1. Really professional performance this by Everton. Their wonderful away form continues. This was their 11th win on the road. It came about through Calvert-Lewin's 24th minute strike. Lovely ball by Ben Godfrey feeding him for his 16th goal in the Premier League. West Ham huffed and puffed. Great chance from Benrahma. Koufal hit the post. Bowen missed the rebound from 2 yards out. But Everton always managed to hold West Ham at arm's length. West Ham 0, Everton 1.
And just one last game tonight as well. Arsenal taking on West Brom. That's a 7 o'clock kickoff. We are going to talk Australian rules football now. And the Irish team, the Irish Warriors, have a Corkman as their new coach. I've been talking to Ona Sullivan about taking up the role, his history in the sport, and more. Okay, we're joined on the line now by the new Irish Warriors head coach, Ona Sullivan. Owen joins us on the line now. Owen, thank you very much for joining us, first off.
No problem, Rory. Thank you.
Tell us, being named the Irish Warriors head coach must be an incredible moment. I mean, like, what was your reaction like when you found out the news that you'd gotten the gig?
I was delighted and honoured, I suppose, would be the two kind of main words. But look, it was something I kind of had on my radar for a while. I've been involved in AFL for just, like 10, 11 years. I've been coaching teams in Cork, university teams and the club teams in UCC and CIT and the Leaside Lions for like the last 8 years. So kind of went through the application process and the interview and all that, and I was delighted to be given the opportunity, because there's fantastic talent there, you know, and to get to work with them and see what we can achieve together is exciting. It's a nice way of saying it, isn't it?
You can take us back on and give us your history in the sport and how you got involved in it.
So I get a bit of slagging because anytime I'm asked that question, I always mention the same guy. There's a friend of mine, Keane Quigley. We were working on a summer course together, and he pulled a Sharon, the Aussie football, out of the boot of his car. So I asked him, geez, where'd you come up with that? And he mentioned there was a leak here. So I had a background in hurling and football, so I went down and tried out AFL, and that was 2009, I think. And I went down once, so I was hooked. That was it. And I've been involved ever since. I've played with the club team up until 2018. Sorry, I was on the national team from 2010 to 2016. And yeah, that's it. I've been, like I said, I was involved in coaching from 2013 up until currently. It's great. It's just a good fun sport. It's similar to GAA and rugby in some ways, wildly different in other ways. Mm. It's attractive.
So what was it specifically, I suppose, about the sport that hooked you and kept you involved all these years?
There's one particular thing. Well, there's lots really, but there's one particular thing that, like, you get rewarded if you can do the if we can do things correctly. Like, say in comparison to GA, if you catch the ball, if you can outfield your opponent and you catch the ball, they can tackle you immediately. But if you can do that in AFL, you get rewarded with a mark. Mm-hmm. Or the same, if you can kick the ball accurately in AFL, you get 6 points. Whereas you only get one if it goes out on a behind, like the secondary posts. Mm-hmm. And there's a defined tackle as well. I wouldn't be the biggest of guys. I'm 5'10" and a little bit. So, like, for me to get the better of a guy who's over 6 foot is tough on a GA field or on a rugby field. But in AFL, there's a defined tackle. It's more of a wrap tackle than hurting people. So if I can wrap him up while he's in possession, then that's, I get the ball, I get possession. So I like those kind of things. You're rewarded for doing things correctly. That always kind of stuck with me, you know.
Yeah, but how does the physicality, I suppose, compare to hurling and football? Because you'd see games on TV from Australia and you're always surprised by the intensity and the ferocity, I suppose, of the physicality.
Yeah, like a lot of people kind of get mixed up between the, say, the international rules, those compromise rules, and the actual game of AFL. Mm-hmm. It's it is physically demanding, but like playing here in Ireland, there's a couple of different kind of standards. There's a social standard where people just want to be involved. There's other people who are pushing to get on club teams and national teams. There's other people who have a background of playing over in Australia. So you have lots of different standards. The physical side of things, I mean, it does take all comers. Like, you need, there's specific positions. You need guys who are 6'5", 6'6" and above to play in, say, key forward positions or in a... There's a guy in the middle called the Ruck. He's the tall guy who taps the ball down. But you also need really small, low centre of gravity guys who play rovers or something like that, or maybe forward pockets, like corner forwards, that are just slow, quick, agile guys, play off both feet. So it does take all corners. You need those, the monster guys, basically, to put in the hits and lay down markers too. So you kind of, there's a niche there for every kind of player, really, you know, which suited me because I wouldn't fit into any of those categories. I was kind of a middle ground guy as a player, but hopefully I had the eye to spot the guys that could fit into the roles of the national team. You know?
And as you mentioned, I suppose the background in hurling and Gaelic football helps, and I suppose that's why Irish players have been successful in Australia over the last number of years. And we've had a number of Cork players play in Australia. Mark Keane, I suppose, the latest most high profile one.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of spoken to the guys in Australia over the years, and they've said that when Irish guys come over, they already have a predetermined idea of how to mark someone, how to tag someone, they call it. But they have no bad habits. So it's basically you're working with a blank canvas, mm-hmm. that you're getting this fit athlete at 18, 19 years of age, and they'll coach them into whatever position, like using their natural ability to be a back or a mid or a forward. And they can teach them the proper kind of kick. They have no bad habits they picked up from playing in Oz. So, I mean, there's 14, maybe more than 14 Irish lads playing in AFL, and there's another 14 Irish women playing AFLW at the moment. So the sports are linked, and they do complement each other. I mean, there's hurling prodigies and football prodigies that have gone over, Camogie as well, that have gone over and been successful in AFLW and AFL. So, yeah, it definitely helps to have that background. But there's lots of people with kind of a skill set from soccer or basketball that would be suitable to AFL too. Like I said, there's roles there for everybody, you know.
Talk to me, Owen, about the game in Ireland and how it's evolved, I suppose, over the last couple of years.
There was a bit of a lull, maybe kind of when people were heading abroad and things like that, and people were heading to Australia and American places for work. So the number of teams dropped a little bit around the country, but there has been a slow and steady kind of increase again lately, particularly in Cork. We have three men's teams and two women's teams in Cork. Then around the country, we've got teams in Dublin, Belfast, North Munster, in Clare, in Galway. There's kind of teams dotted everywhere. So how the league works, it's kind of a two-tier system this year. There's a tier two competition, which is all kind of regional based. You'd have like the Munster teams would play each other, and the men's and the women's play in the same day, same location, kind of increase the social footprint and things. And then there's the premiership, which the men's and women's premiership, where you travel, you play everybody home and away. So there's the South Dublin Swans, for example, would travel to the Belfast Redbacks, or Galway Magpies might come to play the Leaside Lions in Cork. And everybody plays everybody twice. Then there's the final series, where obviously the top team qualifies for the final, second and third playoff for they call it the preliminary final, which we call a semi-final. And that's kind of how it works. Obviously, we don't have full-size ovals, so we can't play 18-a-side. But we play 14-a-side on the GA pitch. We have the behind post, which is the second set of posts, and we have your field umpires, which we'd call referees, these kind of things. So, it's full-on. I mean, the standard is... standard is impressive. There's guys there and girls there that are playing throughout Ireland that they have a great pedigree in playing other sports beforehand, and this might be a secondary sport for them, but it's good. It's very good.
And I'd imagine over the last year there's been very little football played across the country, which must be very frustrating, I suppose, for the players.
Yeah, our group chat lit up last night because the restrictions have been lifted and we finally got to go ahead to go to next week. So there was a few tumbleweeds rolling through that group there lately. Now, we did things like a few initiatives like keeping the football moving, you know, said just training out your back garden, kicking the ball out of shot and someone else catches it and another shot, just to try and keep things going. But yeah, the frustration was really kicking in. So everything's geared towards getting back on the field now. So yeah,
what's your day to day as kind of Irish Warriors head coach going to be like?
Busy will be busy full stop. I know. Look, there's some good guys around in the AFL Ireland committee. My kind of main idea would be to work with the regional managers, so kind of get in contact with the Galway coach, see who's going well there. Just get in contact with all the players. So look, it's an equal opportunity for everybody to go and represent their country, you know. And just like I give out the things that I'm looking for, maybe like fitness or being able to, the ability to kick off both legs or position awareness, this kind of stuff. And then I'll get out to as many regional tournaments as I can, get to as many Premiership games as I can, and watch guys firsthand. There's also an Irish diaspora, I suppose, overseas in the UK. There's leagues in Manchester and in London and places like that, and even on mainland Europe. So there's a few stars kind of dotted around the place there that I'd have to get guys to keep an eye on those too and report back. But it's busy to try and cast an eye over all of them, then bring it all back and figure out who fits in where and try to pick a squad. I mean, There's a 9-a-side version of the game, which is played in Europe on rugby fields. And then there's the 18-a-side, which is played on full-size ovals. So you might only have maybe 16 going to a 9-a-side tournament or 26, 28 going to an 18-a-side tournament. But you could have upwards of 100 people applying. So, or not applying, trialing, I suppose. Yeah. So it's busy and tough. But look, it's what I put my hand up to do, and hopefully I can do it well.
When do you hope to be able to take like your first training session?
Well, there's kind of a return to play plan at the moment with the AFL Ireland that there'll be regional sessions. So there's a session in Cork now on Wednesday for men's and women's for the club team. So I'll be there in my kind of capacity as one of the Leaside Lions co-coaches. But I'd also have my kind of Irish Warriors hat on as well, keeping an eye on guys. And then like that evening would be straight on the phone and seeing how the Dublin lads are going or the Galway or Belfast lads are going. And just kind of keeping my notes and seeing who's fitting and where. Dublin would probably be the main hub for training because, you know, it's kind of equal distance for each club to get to there. So I don't want to kind of put a date in it yet because I don't want to kind of disappoint guys if anything is stopped. But ideally, if I could get everybody together in June, maybe host a few kind of mini tournaments and see how guys are going, that would be an achievable goal, you know, to hold a session up there.
Would you be hoping to compete internationally this year? Is it all just still up in the air?
There's one tournament, though. There's a tournament every 3 years. It's like the Amateur World Cup. It's called the International Cup. It's in Australia. And it was down for 2020, but obviously it was postponed to 2021 and then pushed back to 2022. So we're not sure how that goes. There's also European Championships 18-a-side, and that's supposed to be held next year. But again, we don't know what the lay of the land is. But the 9-a-side version, they hold what's called a Euro Cup. It's a one-day tournament. You could be playing 6 or 7 games in one day. it's really tough going, and that's still penciled in for mid-October in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. So as of now, that's still going ahead. Obviously, we'd have to figure out with quarantine and restrictions and things like that whether it does go ahead, but it hasn't been cancelled or anything yet. It might go ahead, and some countries might be able to attend. But as of now, the Warriors will be going and competing and hoping to win.
Yes, good stuff. And I suppose funding is always a big issue for teams like this, trying to get abroad and stuff like that. Is that an issue that you face and having to fundraise for yourselves, or how does it work?
Yeah, it is an issue. It's a kind of an ongoing issue. It was there when I was a player, and it's now there as I'm a coach. There's no two ways about it. To travel and play is going to cost money, you know. Now, you'd have sponsorship offers, and you'd have organisations and companies coming in to assist in that way, and seeing how we can kind of mutually work together. But a lot of the burden is on players themselves to fundraise, like hosting quizzes or whatever way they want to fundraise. There's kind of sponsorship opportunities to be maybe on the front of the jersey or on gear bags and that kind of stuff as well for companies. But you know, a lot of the burden is on players. So if there is anyone listening that's interested in getting involved with AFL Ireland, look, we're obviously willing to have a chat and see how we can work together. But yeah, look, it's not cheap to travel over to Amsterdam and play a tournament, or to travel to London. To travel to Australia, obviously, is going to cost a nice bit too. So yeah, fundraising is a tricky one, as it is for any sport and any organisation, you know.
Certainly, yeah. And for anyone listening who's thinking, do you know what, I'd like to give this a go and get started, how do they go about it, and what would you say to them?
Well, particularly here in Cork, the guys are very active on the socials, you know, on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and things. If you just look up initially the Leaside Lions, just give it a quick Google search, and you're going to find the club in Cork. Any of the girls who are interested, there's the Cork Vikings. But also anybody who's at third level, you've got MTU, previously CIT, and you have UCC. They both have active men's and women's clubs too. So just give it a quick Google search. If there's anybody listening outside of Cork and interested as well, just search for AFL Ireland on any of the socials. You're going to find them. Drop them an email or drop them a message, and they'll direct you. There's kind of men's competitions reps, women's competitions reps, university reps, all in the AFL Ireland committee. So they'll steer you right. And like I said, it's open to all, caters for everybody. Everybody's welcome, you know.
Excellent stuff. Owen, thanks very much. Congratulations on the job. We wish you the very best of luck with it in the future.
Thanks a million for having me on, Rory. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great to chat to Owen and get everything about the Irish Warriors, about AFL in Ireland and indeed Cork. And as Owen said, if you're thinking about doing it, get in touch with them. It's a fantastic sport to watch. Anyway, I've never played it myself. But as Owen said, there's room in the team for everyone. So be sure and give them a shout if you want to get in touch and start playing AFL here in Cork. Alright, the teams are in for Arsenal and West Brom. That gets underway in just about 10 minutes time. Joe Rawson has the team sheets.
Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta makes 6 changes from the side that drew with Villarreal in the Europa League in midweek. That meant that they went out of the competition. Gabriel, Dani Ceballos, Willian, Chambers and Martinelli all come into the side. Both Aubameyang and Lacazette are on the bench. For West Brom, Callum Robinson and Matt Phillips come into the 11 from the one that drew against Wolves last time out. Dara O'Shea's on the bench, while Ainsley Maitland-Niles is ineligible to play against his parent club. Of course, he's at the Baggies on loan from Arsenal. The Baggies must win or they will be relegated. At the Emirates Stadium, it's Arsenal against West Bromwich Albion.
On our Twitter page, we asked after the Cork performance to give us your one-word summary of Cork's win over Waterford, and some of the responses. Positive came up quite a bit. Goals came up quite a bit. Promising came up. Corkness, which is probably my favourite response. Work rate, positive again. Encouraging, clinical, impressive. Goals, hunger, ruthless, youth, and possibly action. This is my favourite one. Double. That's all it says. Oh, it's going to be a cracking summer, lads, isn't it? All right, Circle K has launched a competition giving the public the chance to name 2 Team Ireland mascots with exciting prizes to be won. The mascots are part of a new range of merchandise launched by Circle K in partnership with the Olympic Federation of Ireland. giving the public the chance to show their support of Team Ireland athletes during the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. For more information, visit circlek.ie. This week, Valerie caught up with Team Ireland athlete, Taekwondo star, and Circle K ambassador, Jack Woolley.
Joining me on the big red bench this week is Team Ireland Taekwondo athlete and Circle K Here for Ireland ambassador, Jack Woolley, joins me. Jack, hello, how have you been keeping?
I'm good, yeah, just getting on with things. It's all we can really be doing at the moment. So, yeah, no, doing good.
Good. You've, I suppose, had a while to wait for something big this year to happen. But for anyone that doesn't know, maybe take us back to when you first started Taekwondo and tell us maybe how it first, I suppose, happened for you.
Yeah, so I started Taekwondo when I was 6. So many years ago now. It'll be 17 years this year. But my brother did it. So he did it as like a form of self-defense when he was in primary school, and he's a few years older than me. So I was always going down and kind of watching him do it. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to join in until I was 6. So eventually when that came around, like, I was a bit of a show off kid, I won't lie. I was probably a little bit of a wreck the head, but I was down the back, you know, they were all training. There's me kicking my legs about and like showing off I could do the splits, you know, stuff like that. The cheeky little one. But then on my 6th birthday, I was allowed to join in, and I did, and I fell in love with it. Then a few years later, I started competing, and I realised that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get to the Olympics. I wanted to be the first person for Ireland to go to the Olympics in Taekwondo. And, you know, it was just ever since I was probably about 8 or 9, that was the goal.
There seemed to be a lot of competition in your house, so I'm sure the brother is not really delighted that you're the one heading to the Olympics, not him.
Well, he lives in Australia now, so I'm the only one left at home. But you know, he kind of took a more different path. He played a little bit more ga, kind of, when we both kind of got to a certain age, we realised I was the flexible Taekwondo one, and he was the one that could catch a ball. I can't catch a ball. So you know, it kind of went two separate directions, and you know, it's better that way we weren't too competitive against each other in the sport.
Good. How have you found I suppose training over the last year? It's probably been difficult. I know things have been opening up a good few over the last few months, but how did you find the first lockdown?
I actually found the first lockdown probably the most enjoyable months of my life. So we actually got back from a competition in Sofia, Bulgaria, and we got back and we were kind of like, coronavirus was talked about. It wasn't really a big, massive thing. Like, there was no testing or anything for it. And we got back, and then on the news, it was like possible lockdown. And we were like, oh my God, like, my best friend was with me. Like, he competes as well. So we were like, it was only supposed to be 2 weeks. He can move in. So he ended up moving into my house as a training partner to keep up the training. 3.5 months later, he's still there. You know, Sport Ireland ended up lending us a load of equipment so that I was still able to keep up my strength and conditioning. And then I still had we got mats sent so that I could do the Taekwondo. And, you know, I got a bob, which is like a standing punch bag that looks like a person. Had my training partner. So to be honest, training was probably more than it ever has been, because we're constantly traveling, you know, so it's hard to have a really strict training routine when you're on a plane every couple of weeks. But it was good, and it was enjoyable. It kind of was like a bit of a break, because I felt like there was so much leading up to qualification, and then it was literally like 2 weeks off and straight back into it. So when we heard about the lockdown, it didn't take me by surprise. It didn't really shock me. I found it a very positive experience. Now, don't get me wrong, the second one was a bit shocking mentally, but I think that was the same with most people. The second one wasn't very good. But the postponement of the Olympics kind of helped me in a way that it gave me a year to get better. It gave me a year to kind of focus, rather than, you know, all the stuff built up around the qualification. I was able to park that a little bit better now that I've had a little bit more time to engage my brain back into a competitive type of way. So it's all been very positive.
Good. You sound so positive. It's right. Where were your motivation levels, I suppose, in the second lockdown? You said you found it tough mentally.
Yeah, so the second lockdown, it was hard because there was a postponement to the Olympics. We still hadn't got any competitions scheduled. My training partner had moved back home because we were still allowed like trained in like an elite bubble. Because when we found out the news, he was like, well, you know, I don't want to be eating your parents out of a home. Like he was, everything was like triple the portions for us because he's still a, he was a teenage boy, like, you know, they eat like a horse. So he'd moved out and sometimes it was like, you know, I'll be getting out of bed and, you know, all like it kind of became a routine where it was literally just wake up, you go train, you come home. I'm really bad for my naps. Like I really need a nap a day. Like, you come home, you have a nap and then you go back to training. And it was just like, it's the same thing over and over again. And I couldn't even imagine what it was like not to even have training. Cause I know there's people out there that literally have just been sat at home doing nothing. And I couldn't imagine how that must be, but you know, I'm lucky that I still had my training, I still had my gym and stuff open. But, you know, the second one was that little bit harder than the first one.
What is the training like for you? I mean, what's the day in the life of Jack's training like?
Yeah, so I usually have like two or three sessions. It depends on the day. So we'll wake up and we'll go usually S&C early on in the morning. I'll have physio before. So physio, then training, and then, like I said, come home, get something to eat, jump back in bed.
A nap.
But people try telling me that I don't nap. I have a mini sleep because it's probably about 2 hours long. but then I go back to training and stuff like that. And then because Tokyo is going to be so hot, we've started adding in little sessions of my training where it's like literally just being hot as much as possible. Because like it's a weight-making sport. I'm used to being in saunas and being in sweatbats, but there's sessions now where I'm doing them in greenhouses on a cycling bike with humidity and stuff, just to try to get used to the weather over there.
Wow, that sounds exhausting. That's Team Ireland athlete and Taekwondo star and Circle K ambassador Jack Woolley speaking to Valerie about his training regime. We've run out of time to play that whole interview. We'll play the rest of it next week, but really, really interesting stuff and an insight on what it takes to be an elite athlete and get to Tokyo. It's really, really interesting. We'll get to that next weekend. But thank you indeed for tuning our way on the Big Red Bench tonight. Very glad you could join us on a day where Cork defeated Waterford in some style as well. Good performance. But as we heard from Jim O'Sullivan at the top of the show, it is just the first game and nobody will be getting carried away. Our podcast will be online in the next couple of minutes. If you missed any of the show, get that on redfm.ie. Conor Halpin's up next with Green on Red with 3 hours of the very best of Irish music coming away between 7 and 10. We're back next Saturday and Sunday from 6. Enjoy the rest of your week, folks.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.